Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. My name is David Reed, and this is Marek Larwood. Hello, Marek.
Hello, David. Hello, listeners. Hello. Mum.
Is she a fan of the show?
No, I think she isn't even aware I do it.
Oh. Why do you keep this such a hidden secret from your own mother?
I don't know, David. Feeling a bit poorly. I've got a bit of a cold or something.
I'm sorry to hear that. You've been filming things at night, haven't you?
I've been filming in the woods at night.
But professionally, not just
I've been paid
wandering around there.
To film in the woods and I've got a really, really tiny part which will probably get cut out of a film that's going to be out next year. And it was filming at, I suppose I can talk about it. It's all about festivals, so it was actually filming out in a boggy, muddy festival. Pretty horrific.
Hey, but it's a film, isn't it? Are you allowed to tell us what it's called?
Well, I don't think so.
Okay, fine.
Sorry, I hate being those people. I really hate that.
No, but you don't want to be. Like,
I can't say it. So why would you even bring it up in the first place, you stupid prick? That's what I'd be saying to myself right now.
Well, you are saying it to yourself.
You are, what, I'm doing this secret thing, how are you? Well, just keep it to yourself until you can talk about it. I can't believe I'm that person.
You've become the very thing you despise.
Oh, God.
We are here to talk about films. How weird. We actually started talking about films.
Normally it's a lot of nonsense, isn't it?
Complete bollocks, yeah, but no, films straight out the bat. But before we talk about the films we've seen at the cinema, we should say we are sponsored by Her Film Project, who are an organisation that help promote diversity in films. So if you're interested in such things or think they might be able to help you, then go to herfilmproject.com and follow Her Film Project on Twitter.
Good.
Now, Marek has been to the cinema this week to see one of the big releases. Why don't you tell us about it, Marek?
I went to cinema in Bristol.
That's a bit of a way to go.
Well, that's where I was working. I went during the day, the Showcase Cinema.
Yeah.
And I neglected to buy myself my bag of popcorn and Coca-Cola.
Right.
So I had to buy them in cinema. £8 for me. £8.50.
Yeah, that's how they get you.
So the markup is huge, isn't it? I need to invent something like popcorn, where you just... It must be about 200 times the value they sell it for. That must cost them about 3 pence.
Yes.
And I was really annoyed that the lady didn't shake up my salt and sweet popcorn. There was no shaking up. And it was all salt on the top for quite... not even layered.
Until you've had far too much salt.
Yeah.
And then the sweet kicks in.
It was just literally sweet at the bottom, then still on top. And I think for £8, whatever, £5 for that, I wasn't pleased.
No. I was reading, I may have to, stop me if I've talked about this on the show before, but I was reading about a new cinema subscription service that somebody's piloting and trying to be the Netflix of cinema. Have I talked to you about this? Where, I can't remember its name, I'm afraid. I'll have to Google it. But... where the idea is you have what is basically a credit card that you pay £10 a month and you pay for your cinema tickets with it, and that's all it costs you is £10 a month, unlimited cinema tickets.
And popcorn?
No, this is the thing. And so, actually, the cinemas don't want it really to happen. But it's the what the, and it will be a loss leader at the moment, because of course if you go to the cinema and the company ends up paying more than 10 quid a month for you, then they're making a loss. But what they want to do is actually change people's expectations of how much cinema tickets cost, therefore screwing the cinemas over and forcing them to give this company a share of their popcorn and drinks revenue in order to keep people going to the cinema. Because if people are used to spending a tenner a month and they can see anything they like, that's what they'll get used to. And then if the company goes bust, someone will say, well, it's £13 to see this one film, and people will go, well, I won't bother then.
I don't work. What? How do the films make money? So, say you're a member of the Pitch House, which I am, and you get 4 free tickets.
And
I use those tickets on, say, I'm going to see Spunk Bus.
Yeah, Spunk Bus, yeah.
And how does Spunk Bus make any money then from that free ticket?
I assume the cinema takes the hit on that, because. Or they'll have a deal with how many free tickets they can give away, but they take a cut on every ticket, don't they?
So the film gets a percentage of the price?
Box office.
Or a set fee?
Well, the presumably different deals for different films, and this is part of the job of negotiating that with the cinema chains.
Can someone email in and tell us how it all works?
Yeah, I'd genuinely be fascinated to know from somebody who actually does this for a living or knows somebody who does. How do films make money in the cinema?
And what percentage do they get? And what happens with the fluctuating prices? Is that just the cinema making that, you know, more money when it's a Friday night than it is on a matinee? Or I don't know.
Absolutely. If most people go to see a film on a Tuesday when the tickets are cheaper, is that film less successful in the ratings? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we've just asked questions. You probably come to this podcast to find answers, but
we're not those guys.
This podcast.
You will find dog noises, sirens.
Police sirens, but possibly some sneezing.
And occasionally Marek might elbow the drinks cabinet and make the clanging noise, which has been a new addition to the podcast.
How many times have I done that?
I think it's 2 weeks in a row now.
It's because the seating arrangements have moved.
They have changed a bit. You've been to the cinema?
Yes.
Before, in Bristol.
Yeah, and I went to the Showcase Cinema, and I was almost the only person in about a 500-seater.
Wow.
Until the very last second, someone walked in and sat down the front.
It's a odd feeling, isn't it?
Very strange.
It does change hugely when there's just one other person there, even if they don't even notice you're there.
But normally, it would have been the first time in a long while that I've been the only person there, but it was just me and another person. Before that, my friend was telling me, or someone who worked on the film I was working on, of a place in Bristol, a video store. This could be a new way of watching films. So like the old Blockbuster, but a sort of independent one.
Yes.
And it's got every single film ever made.
What?
Yeah, they said they've got every single film ever made. Yeah, on a copy of it. And do you know what you can do? What's brilliant is they've got a little screening room. I don't know if it's illegal or not, which you could hire for £25. And it seats about 10 people. So you can go with your mates.
That's £2.50 each.
Yeah. Hire out the whole room with a projector in it. And they play it and watch a film in this private screening room.
Any film ever?
Any film ever.
Where's
this? What a brilliant thing to do. It's in Bristol. I can't remember what it's called, because it was literally, I was on a night shoot and it was at 4 o'clock in the morning. I could barely say my own name. But is it quite a famous video? If you look at video stores or shops in Bristol, it'll be there. But great idea. Apparently some in London as well, apparently.
Sounds fantastic. I mean, I would be, I'm very sceptical they've got every film ever. I mean, a lot of them will only be on VHS, and that's a lot of storage space you need for that.
Well, I don't know, I can't verify that or deny that. Anyway, is that right? Anyway, I went to see a film. Let's get to it. I went to see Borg versus McEnroe, not to be confused with its original title, Borg McEnroe.
Which is about John McEnroe being assimilated by the Borg.
Yes.
And becoming a part of their collective and adding his uniqueness to their own.
Yeah, it's whether McEnroe was a robot during his career, which is a much more exciting film.
But they changed it to be just about one tennis match, right?
That would be great, Borg McEnroe. taking a real tennis match and questioning whether that person was a cyborg. Make it redoing the history that he was a robot.
Such disrespect for a historical tennis match. Just go,
but that'd make that'd be great redoing that. He's the whole story, as you don't know, is that he's a robot.
Yeah.
So Borg McEnroe would have been much better. Anyway, as it stands, Borg versus McEnroe
Yes.
is the retelling of the infamous, I mean, rivalry between Bjorn Borg, the Swedish cool tennis player, and everyone knows who John McEnroe is, the American sort of rough and ready, sweary tennis player.
Was this the famous match where he had an epi?
No, he did not. He did in this tournament. So this is Wimbledon 1980.
So this is the You Cannot Be Serious tournament.
Yeah, so it was during that he really came to the fore by sort of swearing and saying you cannot be serious and smashing his racket. So we're in frustration.
But now we have Hawkeye technology, don't we? So that stops all of this.
Yep. This would not exist.
Hawkeye's one of my favourite bits of tennis now. Going,
that's brilliant.
A circle.
That's a one. That in cricket as well. There are two examples.
Is it called Hawkeye in cricket?
Yeah. Right. Two examples of technology actually benefiting the game, especially in tennis.
Football would love it as well. If it was one of those where it bounces off the
crossbar. They do have that. They've got them in there.
Do they?
Yep. They've got
goal line technology. Yeah. I didn't know they'd actually brought it
in. The last couple of years, they've got it. There have been a couple of instances where they say, I think they communicate, we're on radio too.
Well, that's boring, though. They should put it on the screen like they do at Wimbledon.
I think they do that. I think they do. Okay. I've seen it when they put it on the screen.
Football's already thought of everything I'm saying, again.
Yeah. Well done, football.
Well done, football.
Now,
how is Borg McEnroe? Who's in it?
Okay, so Bjorn Borg is played by Sverre Gudnason, who's a Swedish actor. I didn't recognise him for anything, but why he's in it is he looks almost exactly like Bjorn Borg.
Okay.
He's an extraordinarily similar looking bloke, so he's clearly got that part. Shia LaBeouf plays John McEnroe.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. And quite well.
He's a bit shouty and mad, isn't he?
Yeah. The problem is, when you've got sports stars who are... So, I mean, John McEnroe is so well known, it's almost impossible to sort of play, you know, play him, because he's such a massive personality. Whereas Bjorn Borg was quite quiet and didn't really say anything. So, a much easier part to play. So, this film was well made. It's probably the best you could make a tennis film. But the limitations are Bjorn Borg was well known for being the cool headed, virtually silent tennis player. You know, never said anything, never got roused by anything. So it sort of follows him for his history and how he changed, became that sort of player prior, you know.
Quite like a Borg.
Yes. But when you've got a protagonist who is fundamentally emotionless, it's quite difficult to make the film interesting.
Okay, so he is the lead in it. It's not McEnroe.
It's sort of McEnroe and Borg sort of equally spread. But the way they get around Borg not really having a personality is to get Stellan Skarsgård to play his coach.
Okay.
So suddenly his scenes are a lot more interesting, purely because Stellan Skarsgård's probably got an inflated role of someone doing all the acting against this cold figure.
Telling him how he feels.
Well, yeah, so that you could tell it's just mainly a device to put some life into it. The problem is it's really difficult to make a good film about sport, because the whole great thing about sport is it's live and it's happening then. When do you ever go and watch a match or something, a sporting event that you already know the score to?
Yeah.
The whole point of it is that it's live and the players have got an emotional investment in it.
Yeah, you cannot know the outcome. Otherwise it is a bit dull.
Yeah, so I sort of knew the outcome. And
it's why I never watch anything about the Second World War. I know how it ends.
Yeah, exactly. It's done well, but also my other problem is when you've got actors, you're redoing a famous Wimbledon game, you've got actors playing sport. You don't really want to watch actors playing sport unless it's real sport.
Yeah.
Because you don't see...
And that's a very tenuous definition of the word actor.
Yeah. You don't see people doing great, you know, they're just actors hitting the ball about, trying to make it look exciting, whereas actually...
It's like, oh, he looks convincingly good at tennis.
And you can't really follow any of the rallies, you just have lots of different shots, so crane shots, side shots, you know, close-ups, slow-mos, all this, trying to make it look interesting. They've tried every single... You know, a method of trying to make tennis look glamorous and interesting, but what you're doing is just watching people hit ball across a net, and because you can't show individual points really, it struggles to get that level of excitement. So that is it's fundamentally flawed.
Right.
The good sports films, I think, Major League and Bull Durham, when they're not really about the games, they're more about the personalities and the team.
Yeah.
It's so hard to make a good sports film, or they're documentaries. So Senna, one of the greatest motorsports films, but the greatest sports films of all time, is basically using real life footage, you know, proper footage from the time, all edited together. I think a documentary is always much more interesting, has a huge advantage over making film. So this film, you know, I quite enjoyed it, but it's never more than a 5 or 6 merits, because you're just watching something that could have been more interesting if it was a documentary.
Right. I mean,
John McEnroe is more interesting than Shia LaBeouf playing John McEnroe.
Right.
I'd rather hear him talk about it and say what happened and have old photos.
Yeah.
And it's interesting at the end when all the old photos come up, they're more interesting than bits from the film. You know, you see the 80s stuff. But I've got to say, the costume was brilliant. And it's fascinating to see them replicate all the 80s looks and the exact sports stuff they're wearing, and you see it on the photos afterwards.
Well, in November, actually, Battle of the Sexes is coming out. So there's clearly been a thing in America about making a film about tennis.
That's the Billie Jean King film, with
Emma Stone and Steve Carell. And it'll be interesting to see, because that obviously has quite a lot of baggage, as in of... there's a greater battle going on than just a tennis match.
And it looks more interesting.
Yes.
It's not about that. It's about, you know, sexism in sport.
Yeah.
Whereas this was about a tennis match and Bjorn Borg's and John McEnroe's history, but not really... which wasn't especially interesting.
Right. So how many marks?
5 or 6.
5 or 6, okay. So watch some tennis, is what you're saying.
Well, you watch this film, then you just go back and look on YouTube and watch the main, you know,
the actual game,
the actual bits of the highlights of the game.
Yeah.
And you think, well, that's probably better than...
and then watch some clips of Stellan Skarsgård.
I think he's brilliant.
He is excellent, isn't he?
I love seeing him, and I find his voice really soothing.
Yeah, no, he's very good. Well, there you go. There is Borg versus McEnroe. Maybe don't spend £13 on it.
Yeah, just watch...
How much did the cinema tickets cost where our listeners live? Because I feel like they can't all cost as much as London these days.
This was a matinee at 11 o'clock in Bristol at the Showcase, and it was £8.50.
Right. You know, under a tenner, I think that's all right for a film.
I don't think it's not for 11 o'clock when there's two people in the cinema, you know.
No, fiver. Fiver, I think.
Yeah.
But anyway... yeah, why not tell us, actually? I would be interested how much a cinema ticket costs where you live. Go to filmfandango.com and let us know. But in the meantime, I think it is time for this. Here is a message from Ian Seaburn about impassioning. He says, "Hi, Marek, David and Buddy. I stumbled upon Film Fandango about 3 months ago and have just caught up with the present as I decided to start at episode 81 and listen to everything in release order."
Wow.
I mean, that's commitment. It's been an interesting ride, made all the more enjoyable by me being able to connect the historical dots, such as Marek's allusions to work, which I remember subsequently seeing, and David mentioning finishing a play for the radio, which I also heard when transmitted. Strange how connected life is. Anyway, after hundreds of hours spent in your company, I figured it was only polite to make a donation and drop you an email. To the main subject of this email, my passion for cinema was ignited when I was a young boy in the mid-70s. I was taken to see a double bill of The Jungle Book and One of Our Dinosaurs is Missing, a spectacle I enjoyed so much I persuaded my parents to take me back the following night. However, I think my nerdy infatuation with film was really cemented when I started watching BBC Two's Movie Drome series in the mid-80s. The way in which Alex Cox spoke about the films we were about to watch and showed examples of cinema angles, shooting styles, sound design, and other directorial decisions gave me a critical understanding that has heightened my enjoyment of film ever since. Alas, Moviedrome no longer exists, and as such I'm on a quest to find a current equivalent. My son is 13 now, and a keen actor, mostly stage, but he has done a couple of short films. He's starting to get the movie bug, and I was wondering if you have any ideas as to programs, documentary strands, or events that provide the type of informative and impassioning introduction to film that Alex Cox and Moviedrome did for me. Film Fandango is a source being a given, of course. Secondly, I wondered whether either of you, I'm guessing most probably Marek, has come across Micmacs, the wonderful example of French contemporary whimsical fantasy from director Jean-Paul Genet. I'm something of a fan of Genet, especially The City of Lost Children, but I think Micmacs may be my favourite, for which I'd be inclined to award 10 Ians. I'd be interested to hear your thoughts. Sorry this is so long. I've had a lot to think about in the last 225 episodes. Keep watching the films, Ian. Well, if we could go to his second question first, then. I'm a big fan of Genet as well. La Cité de les Enfants Perdus, or City of Lost Children, I fell in love with when I was a teenager. I thought it was absolutely stunning. Have you seen it?
A long time ago, yeah.
And Delicatessen is another one of his, which is excellent. But I've not seen Micmacs. I've heard about it.
It just something put me off it when it came out. There's the sort of sci-fi element of it.
Right.
And the title... What was it, about 6 or 7 years ago?
Yeah, let me look it up. But
I haven't seen it, but I should definitely watch it.
Yes.
I just completely passed me by. I haven't even thought to watch it. So thank you for that reminder.
2009. So it was...
I was right, 6 or 7 years ago. Yeah. 8 years ago.
Also, any sources of film knowledge and passion... In order to go, I mean, I'm afraid I can't think of any.
There's a really good. I mean, the internet's
a wonderful
YouTube
thing.
YouTube is amazing. There's a thing I occasionally watch for filming techniques called Film Riot, which has been going for quite a long time. It's my friend Paul recommended it to me, and it's just got basically how to tricks with a tripod, tricks with light, how you film this, how you do that. So for your son, might be really interested if he's making short films. It gives you tips on how to do things for no money and do things quite cheaply. There's also a bloke who's about 20 years old called Simon Cade, who makes these YouTube videos called DSLR Guide, and they're about filming things on the cheap. I mean, these aren't really, I suppose, critical analysis of film, and there's more techniques how you film things or some industry secrets, but
yeah.
I would look at Film Riot and DSLR Guide for, I think, more Film Riot's probably a thing of just analysing filmmakers and chatting. You occasionally chat to who was he chatting to, directors, about how they make different films and things like that. So
yeah,
it's a bit, sometimes a bit loud in your face, but I think that might be your best.
I used to love, when I was a kid, reading about how they did tricks, or how, you know, just certain camera techniques and stuff, and then going out and trying to replicate them myself. You know, I remember making a green screen by buying a sheet and hanging it in a window on a sunny day, and the backlitness of it actually made it very effective and stuff. And then you go, this is brilliant, I can do all of this
stuff. There should be more in schools. I was fascinated by film, but, you know, when you go to drama classes, no one teaches... film classes. I mean, people do it themselves, I suppose.
Yeah.
I think it's a real skill to do, doing all that business, but it's the main thing you can do now with cameras.
It is. And we should probably mention in terms of Jean-Pierre Genet as well, obviously Alien Resurrection is another of his.
Oh yeah.
Which for me is it falls between two stools.
It's not as bad as the recent.
It's not as bad. It's just, it doesn't feel like an alien film in the same way the previous ones did. I blame the screenplay more than the director, actually, for that. It feels very comic booky because it's a Joss Whedon script. It feels very, you know, everyone's gagging and everything's a bit glossy.
Yeah.
And then Amelie, obviously, is his most famous one, probably. Have you seen Amelie?
Yeah, I really liked it.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
Oh, I love a good rom-com.
You too, don't you? That's what people know about you. That's what they say. Have you met Marek? He loves a good rom-com.
He can't stop going on about rom-coms.
And have you talked about...
Did you hear about the Morgans? did you hear about the Morgans? Have you smelled about the Morgans?
Have you smelled the Morgans?
Where did you meet the Morgans?
Stick sick of filth.
Someone tweeted in, I think it was Bill Boswell, that they've now removed it from Netflix after 6 months.
Did you stink around the Morgans?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. We're running short on letters. Here's one from Smith Parkman. He writes, did you receive the mail I sent to you? And that's it.
Well, you could probably put it in the search and see if we did.
No, we didn't, I don't think. Smith Parkman.
I don't think we did.
Did you receive...
It could be a bot. Smith Parkman doesn't sound like a name.
It sounds like some sort of criminal, Smith Parkman.
Yeah.
And it's both written in lowercase Smith and Potter's, no punctuation.
I think Smith
Parkman. Did you received the mail I, lowercase, sent to you?
No, I think that's a bot, Marek, trying to get a response from us so it then knows that this email address is a real email address.
Listen, if you're out there, Smith Parkman, and you have written that and you find it really hard to communicate and use grammar correctly and the caps letters, I apologise for us calling you a bot.
Yeah.
Smith Parkman could be going around sending letters like that, emails to everyone, and no one ever replies. No one ever replies. Really,
what
upset.
A lonely life.
Did you receive the mail I sent to you?
I just want to know if you got it or not.
No one's no replied. No one replies. If you know Smith Parkman, tell him to tell him to email in again with a bit more information.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I might just save the next letter for next week because we're running short again.
Yes, we are running short on letters, so if you would like to write to us recommending a film or just you have an idea for a topic of discussion, then go to filmfandango.com and fill out the form, and if and unlike Smith Parkman, it should get through to us.
Oh, I have got one here for the person we just talked about. This is from Bill Boswell. Let's read this one.
Okay, fine.
You can read it because I'm going to think about Smith Parkman for a bit more.
Okay, yeah. Okay, this is from Bill, and it's about Cinema Times. Hi, David, David, Marek, and Buddy. My guilty pleasure is shark movies, and I recently wanted to see 47 Meters Down, but my cinema was only showing it at 8:30 p.m. I can only do day screening, so sadly missed seeing it. In fact, day screening seemed to be phased out altogether. The first performance of the big release, Mother, was 3:30 p.m. An earlier screening of a film in the entire cinema was 2 p.m. This is written very confusingly. When I first started going, there were 11 a.m. showings, but these only appear now during the school holidays or weekends. What frustrates me is the lack of flexibility of cinemas. For example, Dunkirk was shown every hour, every day. My question is, why do cinemas not consider moving performances around during the week? Surely one day of the seven, the evening only...
Sounds like Bill Boswell's letter has been written... by Smith Parkman.
It does. He's got an alias. Surely one day of the seven, the evening only screening film could get an early performance by taking one of the blockbusters' 10 showings a day to try and attract other customers. I didn't understand that at all.
I did.
Okay. It seems cinemas are happy to push performances out on Friday and not change any screening time, but could they be more flexible, or is it too difficult to change films once set up to play? Of course, this current no change to performance time format may work. I sure day moviegoers are in minority, and I don't run a cinema, but I see less and less people at screenings now. I do worry for its future and think anything that could increase customers has to be worth a try. They certainly don't seem to want to reduce admission prices. Keep watching the films. Well, thank you, Bill. Sorry I read that quite poorly, but you also wrote it quite poorly.
That's not nice.
There's not a lot of punctuation in there, Marek.
He's probably so angry about the fact that he can't watch films at the times he wants to. You have to get out quickly.
Just get it right into that keyboard. I understand your concern. I have the same thing as well. When you go, oh, I can't go to that one. What's my alternative? 9:30 at night, and I'll be getting home after midnight. Because there's so many bloody trailers and the film's too long. And it's like this... I'm sure it's coming back to our topic at the top of the programme where there's sort of... what time it'll be on is a deal with the owners of the film.
I don't know whether it is or not. I mean, what Bill's saying totally makes sense to me, is that you just change the time so there's a morning screening of different rather than being it's set in that every day is exactly the same for that week.
Yes,
you just, it's probably just easier for the cinema to tell the projectionist what time they need to do something.
Yes,
rather than the hassle of changing the film. But it can't, nowadays they're all sent on files, aren't they? Computer files, I thought.
I would have thought so.
They're all on a computer thing that they unlock.
There's certainly not a reel of film being spooled.
Yeah, so you just have to go, just be more work. It's probably the simple fact that it's more work for them to reset all these things daily, I'd imagine.
Mm.
But I think it makes total sense to have different times for each films. Or a screen, and these multi-screen cinemas, whereas one screen is just flexible times.
Yeah.
So you have all those other screens set where with their time, I don't know, and you've got screen 5 where you're changing the time each time. But I only go during the day now because I just can't stand other people. So I just literally go in the mornings or early afternoons. So if you want to murder me, that's probably the best time to do it.
Hey, murder fans, here's a willing victim for you who's helping you out.
Have you seen a film?
I have seen a film, Merrick. I saw one on Netflix called Gerald's Game. This is part of the Stephen King resurgence we feel to be in the middle of at the moment. What with, I think, Stranger Things basically mashing all of Stephen King's stories together into one TV series, and it being now the most commercially successful horror film in America. So someone clearly had the rights to Gerald's Game and thought they'd get it out quickly and put it on Netflix, I think.
So I remember reading Gerald's Game.
Yeah, it's quite a famous one.
I gave up because it's felt like a rubbish version of Misery.
There's similarities in that it's a bit like a play and it involves a bed and someone being tied to it. So that's
now I'm interested.
Well, it does start off as a sex game, you see. That's what Gerald's Game is. It's a sex game. But the setup is that... a husband and wife, Jesse and Gerald Burlinghams. They go on a cottage retreat where there's nobody around to try and rekindle their marriage. And Gerald wants to try handcuffing his wife to the bed, and then she doesn't like it because it seems to tip over into him actually having some kind of rape fantasy. And they have an argument, and he ends up having a heart attack and dying, and she's trapped there, chained to the bed. And the rest of it is, what the hell does she do?
It sounds horrible.
Well, it's a good setup for a story, and she starts to hallucinate characters that she talks to as well. So it's not just, you know, no dialogue from there on in. And there's also a dog that she fed some steak to, a stray dog that she fed some steak to earlier because she took sympathy on it, wanders into the house as well, and it's there. So there's that threat the entire time of a hungry dog.
Not a friendly dog.
Well, it's friendly at first, but it's still a wild animal, you know.
Like Buddy.
Like Buddy. If there was a dead guy on the floor, how long do you think it would take Buddy to before he started eating him?
Yeah.
How long do you think?
Well, I don't know. How long do you think you always own her?
I don't know, 8 minutes.
8 minutes before Buddy started eating him?
Yeah.
Buddy, you arsehole.
Aw, little man. So, yes, this stars Carla Gugino, who is not Gina Carano. I make that mistake. It's Carla Gugino, not Gina Carano.
I don't know either of them.
Carla Gugino is not Gina Carano.
You've got a bit of a stutter there, mate.
Carla Gugino is in...
You're still stuttering.
Sin City. Carla Gugino. She's in Sin City.
And, Carla Gino.
No, Gugino. There's a...
Oh!
That's actually her name. She's in Watchmen. She's in Sin City. She's in Night at the Museum. And it's Bruce Greenwood, actually.
Oh, I think I remember her from being... I'm looking on IMDb. She was the ship voice in Batman vs Superman.
Of course she was. She was the ship voice. Yeah, that's right.
Yes, the ship voice.
I remember the ship voice. Brilliant character, wasn't it?
I would definitely put that at the top. That would be straight to the top of
mine. When is ship voice getting her own film?
Yeah, that would be good.
So anyway, she plays Jessie, and it basically it becomes a psychological thriller and supernatural one as well, where she, because she's had no food and no water, she starts to hallucinate and she thinks she sees a man she calls the Moonlight Man standing at the end of the room, and but she can't be certain whether he is actually a prowler who has broken into the flat, into the house or not. And she also is examining the reason she has been so silent and submissive her whole life as well, and the reason she's got into this situation. It's a very good short story. It's nuts. It's really mental, and it only gets weirder as it goes along. Is very enjoyable, but this does feel like a TV movie of that story.
Okay.
So the most interesting things in it are, I think, coming from Stephen King. It's not shot particularly with any real art. It's got a bit of art to it around her memories of the eclipse and stuff, but nothing kind of incredible. And it all feels like it's been done slightly on the cheap.
It's got quite a good IMDb rating of 7, which is all right.
It's good. I would give it 7 Davids. I think I thoroughly enjoyed it. I did not know the story of Gerald's Game. And it's got some, you know, incredible moments in it as well, including Elliot from E.T. Now as a grown man, being quite sinister.
Henry Thomas. What is his name?
Oh, I thought you had Tourette's.
No, that's Elliot from E.T.
Yeah, it's weird to see him being creepy.
He was quite creepy in E.T. if you
I guess
back.
He was, but he wasn't like this, mate. I mean, it'd be spoilers to tell you what he does, but I'll tell you afterwards.
He's not got an alien in his cupboard, is he?
I'll tell you after. Shall I tell you now? But I'll cancel the recording and then we'll carry on again after I've told you.
Well, tell me afterwards now. I want to...
No, I'll tell you now, but I'll cut this bit out.
Okay, sure, what did you do? God.
That's what he does.
Well, it's definitely worse than E.T.
It's definitely worse than E.T., isn't it?
Yeah. That's what happens if you hang around with aliens when you were a kid.
I guess it is.
You grow up to be a sort of sex offender.
Well, that's a spoiler, isn't it?
Well, there we go.
Yeah. So, Gerald's Game's on Netflix. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was weirdly enjoyable. And when you think it's ending, it keeps going. And I... Sometimes that really annoys me, that I'm just going, no, I get it. But no, it kept going and went somewhere. It was good.
Do you think it would have been good if E.T. came back at the end to say it was disappointing, Henry Thomas?
I think it would have been a fantastic ending to reveal this is a story in the bigger E.T. universe.
He comes back and he goes, what the fuck have you done?
You are no friend of mine. And he points his finger at him.
Yeah.
You are no friend of mine anymore. That said, I am stranded again and I need you to help me build a phone.
Now what he does is he gets him on the bike, he does a cycling thing again, and when he gets past the moon, he pushes him off. See you later, you prick.
Well, there's a moon connection there, isn't there? Because he's watching an eclipse.
Is that what he does?
Yeah.
That's why he got excited when he watched the eclipse.
That's it. Well.
I mean, there's a few spoilers there, but I'm just assuming people are going to watch it.
It is good. I'd recommend it. 7 Davids. Well, that's it for this week. We are a bit low on letters, as we said earlier, so if you'd like to get in touch, then go to filmfandango.com. Also, we do all of this for free, so if you have enjoyed the show and would like to donate towards our considerable running costs going to the cinema every week, then go to filmfandango.com as well and click the donate button.
Thank you to everyone who has. We really appreciate it. It's very helpful.
We do. We love to receive your notification emails telling us your names. It's very nice.
We say them out loud and we sing a song about them. We take all our clothes off and clap our hands and say them 3 times.
That's right. That's right.
So if you'd like us to do that.
For you. I mean, you don't get any proof we've done it, but you'll know.
You just have a warm feeling.
Just like we do afterwards.
Yeah.
When we do the last bit.
That'll be the last donation we ever get then, won't it?
Yeah. Oh, well. We'll be back next week.
Keep watching the films.
Films. Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.